Welcome back to our shiur in the Kutis Tichas. Today we will be learning the Tichah on Parshas Achrei in Chelek Yud Beis. It is a Tichah on Rashi where the Rebbe analyzes both here and wherever it's found in Torah the term Ani Hashem, which we often find appended to or introducing various mitzvahs in the Torah. As a background to this Tichah, 2 points of information. The Parsha, which this Pasuk and the Rashi begins, is Parshas Arayis, where the Eibishter tells Moshe to tell the people that there are various relationships which Hashem forbids, either adulterous or incestuous, two close family members. So all of them are under the general heading of arayos. And the Pasuk introduces this parsha by saying that Hashem should tell the people, Ani Hashem, I am Hashem, Elokeichem, your God. The second point is that we find in the book of Ezra, in the last two chapters, it tells a story about the return of Bnei Yisrael, specifically the people of Malchus Yehuda. They return from the Golos in Bavel after 70 years of exile under the leadership of Ezra HaSofer. And Ezra tells the story of how when they got back, the leaders of the people told him that they had a problem. Many of the people had, during the time of Golos, intermarried with women from Amon and Moab and Edom and Canaanim and so on. And they were coming back to Eretz Yisrael to start fresh with their Goyish wives and children. So Ezra made a great commotion. He davened to Hashem to help him eradicate this problem from Yidden so that they could start over again in the Eibishter's good graces. Then he called a big meeting in the middle of the winter. He got the people together and he made them promise that they would let go of their Goyish wives. They would send them back where they came from together with the Goyish children. And this was a major, major pledge on the part of the people. But Ezra impressed on them how it was destructive to even think about beginning life again as Yidden under the Eibishter's watchful, protective eye in Eretz Yisrael with a new Beis Hamikdash when they were intermarried, living with women who came from all kinds of nations and beliefs which they brought with them. It took 2 or 3 months of going through family by family, but it worked. And the Yidden overwhelmingly dismissed the wives and children, the Goyisha, so Ezra's campaign was successful. We will see in the Rashi how this story features in our discussion of arayos. Back to the Rashi. The Pasuk says, right at the beginning of this section, Parsha Yudches, Vayidaber Elokim el Moshe, Vayomer Elov Ani Hashem, Daber el Bnei Yisroel, Vomar Tu Aleihem, speak to Yidden, and tell them, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem, their God. And the Eibishter continues, do not do like the practices of the land of Mitzrayim where you came from. Do not do like the practices of the land of Canaan where you're headed for. They did all kinds of depravities, but you do not do that. And then the Parsha continues with a list of which relations are forbidden to Eden. Rashi brings the words Dani Hashem Elokeichem from the Pasuk, And he explained, Ani hu, I am the one, said the Eibishter. So Amarti b'Sinai Anoichi Hashem Aleikecho, who told you at Har Sinai, at Kabbalah's Torah, I said to you, I am Hashem, your God. And those were the Eibishter's opening words. And v'kibaltem aleichem malchuti, you accepted, said the Eibishter, my sovereignty. Me'ato, kablu gzeroistai. Now accept my gzeros, my decrees. Rabbi Yoimer, Rabbi Yehuda Anosi, Rabbeinu HaKodesh says, Golui v'yodua lefono, it was revealed and opened before the Eibishter, shesoifon, that in the end of time, in the future of Eden, they would be torn away from the Eibishter through arayos, through relationships that they had, illicit relationships. B'yemei Ezra, in the days of Ezra, as I described above, L'pikoch, therefore, because Hashem knew what would happen in the future, therefore, bo aleim b'gzeira, he comes upon them with a stern warning. Ani Hashem elekeichem. I am Hashem, your God, meaning du'u mi goizer aleichem. Know who it is that is decreeing this upon you. I am a dayon lihipora. I am a judge who is trustworthy to repay, to penalize those who transgress my words. Benemon, and I'm dependable, l'shalim tzchar, to repay a reward to those who listen to my commandments. That's Rashi. What is Rashi telling us in this simple sense? That it seems strange. What is the Eibishter saying? I am Hashem, your God. We not know that yet, that Hashem is our God. He has to inform us. So Rashi explains that this is just an introduction to what is written afterwards, that since you have already accepted my sovereignty, then now accept my commandments and my decrees, which will be written further on in the Parsha of Arayos. That's the first interpretation. Then Rashi adds another different interpretation. How do we know that it's another one and not just flowing from the first one? Because Rashi uses the word Rebbe Oimer. Whenever we have a statement following another statement, if we want to say that the second one merely adds to the first one, you say Omar so-and-so, said so-and-so. But when you say Rebbe Oimer, that so-and-so says, it means we have the first statement. But there's an implied but here. But Rebbe said differently. What did he say? That being that Hashem knew that they would get tripped up by Arayos in time to come in the future, therefore he warns them. That's a simple understanding of the Rashi, the way the Meforshim say. But the Rebbe is difficult, and the Rebbe poses 8 questions on the Rashi according to this understanding. First of all, Rashi at the beginning of Bo'era, where Hashem speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayidabra Lekim El Moshe, Vayoymer Elov, Ani Hashem. Hashem spoke to Moshe and said, I am Hashem. So Rashi comments there that wherever we find in many places the term Ani Hashem or Ani Hashem Elekeichem, what it means is that Hashem is saying, I am trustworthy and faithful and dependable to reward those who listen to me, and the opposite to the opposite, to those who don't. But that way Rashi says, Vakahu nidrash bekama mekoyim, is so it's understood in many places. So why does Rashi find it necessary to explain in our pasuk what Ani Hashem Elokecha means after he's already explained it? And said that this is what it means elsewhere. He's already explained that at the beginning of Parshas Bo'era. So yet, Rashi explains it here. Not only does he explain it here, but he explains it in a way that's different from the way he explains it in Parshas Bo'era. Second of all, what is this difference between accepting Hashem's sovereignty and accepting his decrees? Seemingly, in Pshuta Shel Mikra, in the method of Aloche or Drash, other methods, it's not so. But in the Pshuta Shel Mikra, in the simple sense, what does it mean to accept someone as your sovereign? That you will listen to his instructions, his commands. As Rashi himself says in the Parshas Yisroi, where Hashem introduces himself at the Aseres Hadibris, at the beginning of the Aseres Hadibris, and he says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, which means, as Rashi says over here, that you have accepted my sovereignty. So Rashi there says that because I took you out of Mitzrayim, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, asher hetzitzicha mi'eretz Mitzrayim, because I took you out of Mitzrayim, it is right that you should be mishubodimli, that you should be subject to my laws. Aha! So the Kabbalah's Hamalchus, accepting the Eibishter's sovereignty, means accepting to listen to his laws. So what are these two things that Rashi said over here? Now that you've already accepted my sovereignty in Har Sinai, now accept my gzeiros that I'm going to tell you. On the other hand, said the Rebbe, in the third question, if there is a difference between accepting Hashem's sovereignty and accepting his laws, then this introduction, Ani Hashem Elokechem, should have come not here at the beginning of Parshas Arayis in the middle of Chumash Vayikra, but before the Eibishter issues his first mitzvah, he should say, I am Hashem whom you accepted as your sovereign, so now accept my laws. Fourth question, what is this expression that Rashi uses, now accept gzeiroistai, my decrees? Why not mitzvoistai, or some other usual expression that we find all over the Chumash Rashi? Fifth question, whenever Rashi gives two comments, two interpretations of a pasuk, it is because each one is insufficient by itself. There's a problem with it, and that problem is solved according to the other interpretation. And likewise, the second interpretation is problematic, but the problem with the second interpretation is solved by the first. Of the two, the first is closer to the simple meaning of the pasuk, which is why it's first. Over here, what is the problem with each of the two interpretations which necessitates another interpretation? Seventh question. Concerning transgression, the usual term is avere, or to be nichshal, to stumble over a certain prohibition. Here Rashi said that it was known, it was revealed to the Eibishter, that in the future the Yidden would linotek, they would be detached from Hashem in the area of Arayus, in their relationships in the days of Ezra. What does the expression linotek, to be detached? Lastly, Rashi bases his comment on the Torah's Koyanim, on the Medrash Halacha of Vayikra. But there, the Torah's Koyanim cites as a support that Yidden would stumble in the area of Arayos It says that the Pasuk says when the story of the Meraglim happened, when the spies came back from Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu heard Bnei Yisrael boicha lemishpachos. So he heard the people crying by their families. Simple meaning is families got together and they cried, each family. But what's the expression boicha lemishpachos, crying to their families? Therefore, Rashi interprets it as they were crying about family issues, the fact that they were forbidden different relationships, in fact, as we learn in this parsha, Parshas Arayis. That the Torah's Koyanim's proof that the Yidden hankered after Arayis. Rashi doesn't bring that. Instead, Rashi brings an incident that took place 1,000 years later in the time of Ezra, and he ignores the proof that the Torah's Koyanim brings from the story that happened in Moshe Rabbeinu's own time shortly thereafter, that the people cried about the Parshas Arayis. Why? Why ignore Araya at hand, a proof from something at hand, and instead prove it from an incident that was going to happen 1,000 years later? So those are the 8 questions that the Rebbe raises about the Rashi. And the Rebbe explains. Going back to the question of why Rashi finds it necessary to explain the term Ani Hashem Elekeichem, although Rashi had already explained it, and not only explained it on the spot, but explained it as meaning the same thing in many other places. Rashi had already explained it at the beginning of Parshat Vaera in Chumash Mois. So the Rebbe asked, why does Rashi find it necessary again? Says the Rebbe that what Rashi said over there, that Ani Hashem, means that Hashem is faithful to reward those who deserve reward for following Hashem's mitzvahs and to penalize those who do not. That is good when it comes after a commandment. Hashem says, here's what you should do. And he concludes, Ani Hashem, remember that I take an interest, I'm concerned with what you do, and if you do right, I will reward you, and chas v'sholem, the opposite, if not. Here, it comes at the very beginning, unlike everywhere. So in what sense is it that at the very, before Hashem says the commandment, he says, Ani Hashem Elekeichem? In Parshas Bo'eiro, it's also the beginning of a parsha. But there Hashem is, so to speak, introducing himself to Moshe. You, Moshe, were wondering about who, where am I? I promised Yidden that I would help them, I would redeem them. Where am I? So I'm telling you, Ani Hashem, I'm faithful to keep my promise. But here, what does it mean? It's not an introduction to Yidden. And it's not a reinforcement of any mitzvah, because no mitzvah has yet been said. That's why Rashi explains it, that in fact, it's a statement in itself. I am Hashem, your God, not just as an introduction to the mitzvah or as a reinforcement to a mitzvah. But I am Hashem, your God. You know that I am Hashem, your God. You've already accepted my sovereignty, right? Therefore, you shall now also accept my gzeiros, my decrees. It's not an acceptance for the first time of Hashem's sovereignty. They've already accepted that at Har Sinai. But it's also not an acceptance of Hashem's commandments in general, because that's part of the meaning of accepting Hashem's sovereignty, according to Rashi, accepting that they will listen to Hashem's command. So what is it here? It's to say that now accept a new kind of command, which is called Gzeiroistai, my decrees. What is this decree? What kind of new type of command is this? That's the parsha of Arayis, which is different from the mitzvahs that they had before, and it begins a new class of mitzvahs called Gezeirois, as will be explained in the next section, why it is that they have to accept Gezeirois specifically. At Har Sinai, they accepted to do Hashem's mitzvahs, but that doesn't yet mean that they would do the kind of mitzvahs called Gezeirois, because that they don't expect. Now that Hashem is about to issue Gezeirois, they should know that they can't say, no, we didn't buy into it for Gezeirois. Once you accept Hashem as your sovereign, you are bound to keep all of his laws, including those which are called Gezeirois, like Parshas Arayois. So the Eibishter never needed to give this reintroduction on Hashem Elokeichem before, because that was part of their accepting Hashem's sovereignty that they accepted at Har Sinai. Specifically here, when we're beginning with Parshas Arayis, which is the new kind of mitzvah called Gzeiros, here Hashem finds it necessary to say Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Now, why is Arayis a special class of mitzvahs called Gzeiros? So the Rebbe introduces, generally speaking, when it comes to relationships between husband and wife, ashidach, one looks for yiches, one looks for lineage. And we find this again and again, that Avraham Avinu instructed Eliezer, go to my family in Aram Naharayim and find a wife for Yitzchak from my family, so that I know what her lineage is. Likewise, when it comes to the marriage of, when it comes to introducing Nachshon ben Aminodov, the Pasuk says that Nachshon ben Aminodov was the brother of Elisheva bas Aminodov, who was Arna Kohen's wife. So tells us, whom did Arna Kohen marry? Elisheva, daughter of Aminodav, who was the brother of Nachshon. And from there we learn that when marrying a woman, one should check her family, her brothers specifically. So the importance of lineage is impressed on us again and again in the Chumash until here. So it would seem that it's most logical Dafke to marry someone related. And the closer the relationship, the better. Both because the lineage is clear and established, and even more so because the purpose of marriage is v'hoyu l'bosor echad, that husband and wife should be joined as one flesh in their children, and that they should give birth and rear children, and that should work much better if the parents would be related to each other and closer to each other. Yet, the Parsha of Arayis tells us exactly the opposite, that which are the relationships which are forbidden, those where the man and the woman are dafke closest. That's one strange thing about Arayis. A second thing, how did the world get going? How did humanity get started? Hashem created together with Cain and together with Hevel. He created twin sisters and they married them. Likewise, Yaakov Avinu married two sisters, which would be forbidden in the Parsha of Arayis. And it was specifically Yaakov of all the Avos who is considered most perfect. All of his children were righteous, unlike Avraham Avinu, who had a son Yishmael, unlike Yitzchak Avinu, who had a son Esav. Yaakov Avinu is mitosa shleimo, his bed was perfect. All his descendants were righteous. None of them broke away from him. So whose children were they? The children of two sisters that Yaakov Avinu married. So it works. Likewise, Amram, Moshe Rabbeinu's father, whom did he marry? His aunt, Yochevet. And who was born of that union? Moshe Rabbeinu, Arna Koyim, Miriam and Aviah. What wonderful progeny. So it's not only strange, but it's paradoxical. And a person could say, and the Rebbe brings the parallel of saying this from Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu says, after the story with the Akedah, he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, I don't get it. First you tell me that I'll have a son Yitzchok, and he will grow to be a great nation. Then you tell me to take that son who's supposed to be the father of the nation, and no one has born to him yet, and I should slaughter him. Offer him as a korban. So what happened to that nation? I didn't say anything. Then you tell me, no, don't slaughter Yitzchak. Don't raise a hand against him at all. So which is it? And in a very similar vein, Ayit could say, Ribbono Shel Olam, first you tell me that the way humanity gets going is by marrying sisters, and the way tzaddikim are born is by their parents marrying each other, even though they're closely related. And now you're saying, no, if it's a close relation, you mustn't marry. So where do we stand? That's why this whole class of mitzvahs are called gezeiros, decrees. They go against the intuitive logic of people who look at themselves and at history, and they don't understand why is the Eibishter saying these instructions. That's what the Eibishter says. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. You've accepted me as your God. Now accept to follow not just mitzvahs, but even those mitzvahs which are gezeiros, their decrees, which you don't understand or they seem to you paradoxical. That is the first interpretation of Rashi, why over here Hashem says, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. But Rashi doesn't suffice with that interpretation because it has a problem. It's true that here we begin with a new kind of mitzvah, which are gzeiros. So they had to accept to follow those gezeiros, those decrees. But it would seem that when they accepted Hashem's sovereignty in general, as soon as he starts instructing them with mitzvahs, he should say, now that you've accepted my sovereignty, which means to follow my laws, that extends to all the laws I'm going to give you, including some which you will not understand at all. Why wait till Parshas Acharei and the introduction to Parshas of Arayos to say this, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, you must accept my gzeiros? That's one problem with the first interpretation. Second of all, it's not like this idea of not marrying relatives is so new to them. Already, B'nai Noach, children of Noach, way back before Avraham Avinu, they were already forbidden certain relations, at least those which were very close, marrying sisters, mothers, daughters, that was already forbidden before Matan Torah. And although they were not forbidden to marry two sisters, and they were not forbidden to marry an aunt, so what Yaakov Avinu did in his time was okay, marrying two sisters. what Amram did in his time, marrying his aunt was okay at the time. True, but the basic idea of Arayis was already there. So it's not so surprising. And the Yidden had said at Matan Torah that all that Hashem would tell us, said, so they understood that it's going to include the prohibitions of Arayis. It's problematic to say that Hashem finds it necessary now to introduce the ideas of Arayis with a special declaration, accept my decrees. Because of these two difficulties, why did Hashem wait till now? He could have said that statement that you must accept all my mitzvahs as soon as the Eibishter gave the first mitzvah, and second of all, B, they were already introduced to this idea of Arayis long before Matan Torah, and at Matan Torah they said, so we'll do whatever Hashem says. So they understood that they're going to have to keep the prohibitions of Arayis. Because of both these difficulties, Rashi does not suffice with the first interpretation. He brings the second one, that in fact, the words Ani Hashem Elokeichem serve the same purpose, they fulfill the same functions as the word Ani Hashem or Ani Hashem Elokeichem, which is usually said at the end of a mitzvah, to reinforce the mitzvah, to know that Hashem is the God who will reward you when you follow his mitzvahs, and Chas V'Sholom the opposite. It fulfills the same function. So why does Rashi have to say it over here? Why is it said over here before the mitzvah? So Rashi brings from the Torah's Koyanim, but he deviates from the language of the Torah's Koyanim in order to highlight that the prohibitions of Arayis are different from all others because it involves tearing a person away from Hashem. What is it about Arayis that tears the person away from Hashem more than any other prohibition, kashrus and Shabbos, etc.? Says the Rebbe, this is what we find as one area of Pashas Arayis, which will be explicated later, not right here in detail in this Pasha of Arayis, but it will be stated later that there's one area in Arayis which tears a person away from Klal Yisroel altogether. What is that? If Ayid marries Rachmona Litzlan, a woman who is forbidden to him, a relation, if he has an adulterous relationship with a married woman, the resulting child is a yid. He has a blemish. He's called a mamzer. But he's a full-fledged yid like any other yid. But if a yid marries a woman from some other nation, the child born of that union is a goy. And in that way, the lineage of the father stops altogether. That line, which goes back to Avraham Avinu, has come to an abrupt end. And the Yid is torn away completely from the Eibishter. In fact, he's taking the seed of Yisroel and he's putting it in a foreign place where it has nothing to do with the Eibishter anymore. That is unique to the prohibition of Arayis. It doesn't exist with other prohibitions at all. This linotek, to be detached from the Eibishter, that truth specifically of Arayis, or the one area of Arayis. Now that's why the people cried, the Rashi doesn't bring that the people cried about Arayis as a support for the fact that they were hankering after Arayis. Instead, he brings the story of Ezra And before, the Rebbe said, why not bring a raya from something close at hand that happened then instead of a raya from 1,000 years later? Now we understand why. The story of Ezra concerned Yidden who had married Goyish women. They had intermarried. And that is linotek. That is detaching themselves. And that was the whole commotion that Ezra made, that you're detaching yourself from the Eibishter. Just as he's ready to bring you back to be his people in your land. But when they cried about mishpochois, le mishpochoisov, to their families, family prohibitions, that was about the prohibitions which would not result in a complete detachment from the Eibishter. It would result, Rachmon al-Islan, in a blemished child, but not in nituk, in detachment. So since Rashi is stressing that the gravity of this Parshas Arayos, is that it contains an element of detachment which no other Aveda does, so he doesn't prove it from the Postuk, that Moshe Rabbeinu heard the people crying about their family prohibitions. He proves it from the Postuk in Ezra. And the Rebbe adds that although here in our Parsha they were not instructed about not intermarrying, but since this is the Parsha which starts the list of prohibitions in the relationships, so, and part of that prohibition is that a person can be completely detached. Therefore, in introducing this parsha, the Eibishter said, "Ani Hashem Elokeichem," to add to the gravity of this prohibition, so they should know who it is decreeing this. That is Hashem Elokeichem, Hashem who will reward you if you follow His ways, and who will penalize you if you fail to follow in his ways, despite the fact that these are difficult to keep to and people have a tendency to violate them. So why doesn't Rashi suffice with this second interpretation of Rebbe? Because it too is difficult in another way. In Pshuta Shel Mikra, the simple sense of the Pasuk, to say that Hashem adds a special clause, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, here, because he knows that in 1,000 years from now, it's likely that something will take place, and he sees it already as the taking place, and therefore the Eibishter wants to forestall it. By saying Ani Hashem Elokeichem is shver, that in Pshuta Shel Mikra, that is referring to something 1,000 years later. Therefore, Rashi brings the other interpretation, that this is an introduction to Gezeiros, and in fact he brings this as his first Pirush, meaning this is closer to Pshuta Shel Mikra than the second Pirush, that is because of the story of Ezra, that Hashem is saying this is a very grave prohibition, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. But in order to remove some of the sting of the difficulty that the Torah is referring to an incident 1,000 years hence, Rashi alludes to an answer without saying it explicitly, but he alludes to it by saying that, you know who said this interpretation? Rebbe. What is it about saying that it was Rebbe Yehuda Hanossi, who said this interpretation? What is it about saying that would better help us understand that why Hashem is talking about an incident in 1,000 years in the future? Who is Rebbe Yehuda Hanossi? What was extra special about him? He was a Tana among other Tanoim. Yes, he was a prince from the house of David, But what is he most renowned for? When you say it, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, what it immediately calls to mind is that he was the one who organized and recorded the Mishnah. Until his days, the Mishnah was oral, taught from teacher to student. Rabbeinu HaKodesh, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, was the one who recorded it, and that was a very big deal. Why was it a big deal? Because according to the original Torah law, the oral law was not meant to be recorded. It was meant to be transmitted from teacher to student orally and not recorded. But that chain of transmission in the days of Rabbeinu HaKodesh was in danger of being broken. It came a time when there was a concern that maybe the oral law will chas v'sholom be lost because they were unable to keep up the chain of transmission. So Rabbeinu HaKodesh saw that it's necessary in order to preserve Torah to record it. And that's what he did, despite the original Torah prohibition against recording it. So where did he get authorization to do that? His authorization came from a pasuk in Tehillim, Kapitel Kuf Yutes, chapter 119. There it says in the letter Ayin, Eis lasois laHashem, is the time to act for Hashem's sake. Heferu teirosecho, they are disturbing or destroying your Torah. So simply it means, the time to act for Hashem when those who wanted to interfere with Torah, they want to act against it, so we must stand up for it. But the Mishnah in Mesechta Brachos and the Gemara there explained more fully that it's a time to overturn the Torah for us to overturn the Torah. To overturn that prohibition against recording Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, we should overturn it. Why? As a time to act for Hashem's sake, because it looks like Torah Shebaal Peh would be lost. In other words, this pasuk in Tehillim by David HaMelech, which was said also about 1,000 years before Rabbeinu HaKodesh, that pasuk in Tehillim refers to the time of Rabbeinu HaKodesh, and it gives a license for him to record the Mishnah. If that's what that pasuk means, so according to Rabbi Rabbeinu HaKodesh, it makes sense to say that the meaning of a pasuk will be understood on the basis of an event many, many years later, 1,000 years later. And that's why this pasuk, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, can be understood, according to Rabbi, as alluding to an event which would happen in the days of Ezra that Hashem wanted to forestall. So let's look back at the Rashi now, in light of what Rabbi taught us, and see how we understand Rashi differently. The Rashi brings two interpretations. The one that I am Hashem, your God, whose sovereignty you accepted upon yourself at Sinai, now accept my Xeris. How do we read the pasuk according to this interpretation of Rashi? Rashi is saying, the pasuk is saying, I am Hashem, your God. It's known from the time of Sinai that you've accepted my sovereignty, which means, according to Rashi, that you've accepted to do my mitzvahs. But now I'm going to instruct you in gezeiros, in mitzvahs which are surprising and paradoxical to you. That's why I'm making the statement, a statement in itself, not just to reinforce the mitzvah of arayis like other cases of Ani Hashem or Ani Hashem Elokeichem reinforce a specific mitzvah. It's a statement in itself, I am Hashem, your God, which you've already accepted. Now, we're going to apply that to the mitzvah of arayos, which are a specific class of mitzvahs called gzeiros. According to the second interpretation, Rebbe, the word ani Hashem lekechem served the same function as they usually do all over Torah. They reinforced a mitzvah which Hashem gives, but normally they are said at the end of a mitzvah. I'm instructing you, says Hashem, in this and this mitzvah, and make sure that you keep it, because I am Hashem who is reliable to reward you or to punish you. Over here, that statement is said at the beginning as an extra phrase, impressing upon them the gravity of the mitzvahs of arayos, the prohibitions of arayos. And why does Hashem want to impress upon them the gravity? Because he knows that they have a shvachkeit, a weakness for arayos. As we will see 1,000 years hence, that they will fall into the trap of a kind of arayos which tears them away from the Eibishter altogether. And that was so grave about the prohibitions of arayos, that it tears them away, in that their children will no longer be Jewish at all. And that's why the Eibishter reinforces this mitzvah at the very beginning. And the Rebbe puts this into the words of Rashi, because Hashem knows that they have a weakness, bo aleihem b'gzeira. He comes to them at the outset with a stern warning. He doesn't leave it for the end of the mitzvah. He tells them, what I'm going to tell you now is especially grave, so remember to do it, because I, Hashem, am reliable to punish those who disobey and to reward those who obey.